we have Carlton Gibson. Carlton, you are on Django Chat, and you were just recently, you just stepped down as being one of the Django Fellows. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I did, Brian. Yes. So I was 5 years in the role there. I was described that as being the janitor. You know, we keep the floor clean on Django. So I did 5 years of triaging the tickets and responding to every fire hose comment. And it's, I'm still very much enjoying stepping back from that, and the sort of change of there, that's, you know, it's still very fresh for me.
Well, if you describe it as janitor stuff, did you spend like most of your time then in the, like the Django, the issue tracker and stuff then? Is that?
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah. So literally, like, so Django, you've got to imagine, like, it literally gets 5 new ticket reports a day, every single day. Like, you know, Christmas, it will get 5 new ticket reports. It's like, it's nonstop. And then there's PRs, and we have a security at djangoproject.com email for security disclosure. That's very busy. We get a lot of reports, and you have to look at those, and a lot of them, you know, can be, no, this isn't an issue, but some of them are very serious. And then there's, so Django has a point release pretty much every month, and it has a major release every 8 months. And the fellows are responsible for that. And contributors, they'll do a PR, but it's, you know, it won't get reviewed. And so the fellows do the bulk of the PR review. You know, so having stepped down, I was CC'd on a recent async issue, because it's one of my areas that I'm interested in. And I kind of commented, I you know, made sure it's sane, but I haven't done that fine, like, you know, really fine detailed review that the fellows will do, because I'm no longer the fellow. So it's okay. I haven't got the time, the capacity to do that extra level. And that's what the fellow role is all about. It's just a web framework the size of Django's, it just wouldn't get done. And it historically wasn't getting done. And so the fellow role was created, and then Tim Graham did it for a number of years. I came along, then Marish Felisiak there, and now Natalia Baidat has just started. And so, you know, it's continuing, but I've stepped away. And it really is a relief, because that fire hose of notifications, that's quite hard work. You know, it's real work. It really is.
Yeah. It's a paid role, right?
Yes, exactly. So the DSF contracts the fellows to do that day-to-day maintenance.
Yeah. Now, outside of like work, I don't know if you did built used Django when you were as a Django fellow, but do you build websites with Django also?
Yeah, no, I have forever. I mean, this was the thing. So I don't know, 2005, 2006, I got big fat book, web development with PHP and MySQL, and it was like my introduction. That was great, and I was doing that for a while, and I was using Zen Framework, and then I went to a web conference called Future of Web Apps, which was an amazing thing. You know, Twitter was fresh, and I don't know, there was all sorts of things going on, and everyone was talking about this Django. So I got home and I googled it, and it said the web framework for perfectionists with a deadline, and I'm like, that's me. So I've been happily using it ever since, and I got into I had a sort of mini career building mobile web applications with backends. So I was building the both sides of it. I was building the front end mobile app, and then also the server backend. I was doing that with Django REST Framework. And so I got into helping with Django REST Frameworks. Tom Christie, who was the creator of that, came on the mailing list. He said, look, I need a bit of help answering questions and triaging tickets. And, you know, so I just did that. And then all of a sudden he was like, oh, well, you know, you can, I got the commit bit there, you know, it was like, oh, wow, I can merge this PR. And and then a few years later, I took on Django Filter, I took on Django Crispy Forms, I took on Django Compressor helping out there, because these were dependencies that I was using, and I was building my business around them, and I had to make sure that they weren't going to break. Like it was like, I can't have Crispy Forms just stop working. So I helped out and made sure it was working. And then the fellow role came up. Tim Graham said he was going to step back. He'd been doing it for, you know, 4 years, I think, full-time solo, which is a lot. And he said he wanted to step back. And so they advertised for a fellow. And I said, I'd like to do it part-time and help. And I was, you know, I don't know who else applied, but I was lucky enough to get that role. And so, I, you know, 5 years later, here I am.
So were you still doing, like, as a freelance, I don't know if you're a freelance or otherwise.
So I've always been an independent. I've, you know, I worked at, you know, various companies, like big and small, like from the very biggest to, you know, tiny,
But through being a fellow, you were also still doing that, or?
A little bit, but not very much. The reality was I didn't have very much capacity. So I was doing a little bit, like the odd bit that came up. Yeah, okay, I'll do that. But I wasn't, I thought initially, yes, I was doing, you know, I started fellowing part-time and I was continuing to freelance part-time. But as the time went by, and it was over COVID, remember, as well. And things were difficult. I kind of was doing less and less just because life and capacity. I mean, I've got four kids, which is another sort of thing. And so having four kids and fellowing like 3 days a week, and then maybe I do a day a week on my own projects, and then, oh, have I got a day a week's capacity to do some client work? Well, if that client work just fell in my lap, then yeah, okay, I'd do it. But
you're not seeking it out or doing marketing.
Yeah, I wasn't seeking it. Okay. And the reality was by the end, you know, so I stepped down in March. By the end, I was kind of tired. I said to everybody that I stepped down in March. I was going to give myself till the end of June, which was after DjangoCon Europe. I was just going to go cold turkey, and I wasn't going to look at the issue tracker. I wasn't going to look at the notifications on Django. I wasn't going to do anything. And there was only one day I let that slip. Somehow I got CC'd on a pull request or an issue, and I found myself answering comments on track, and I was like, no, stop, back away.
Well, so now that you've, so you're a few months out from being a fellow now?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I am. Yes.
Did you take a few months off, or are you back to doing client work, or what are you doing now?
No, well, I'm working on and I've got two applications on in the bag. One is called PaaS, which is a tool in the environmental and social governance sector, which is working with a friend of mine who I've known 20 years who works in that sector. And traditionally, his work has been using Excel, and whenever Excel is in use, then, you know, it's an opportunity to turn that into a real application. And so we're doing that very standard thing of embedding his domain knowledge in a web application, and then, you know, hoping to sell that to clients. So that's up and coming. And then I've got a deployment tool, which I've been talking about, you know, for years now, all through the pandemic, I've been talking about it, but I just haven't had the capacity to build it, called Button, which is a sort of take on deployments for targeting simple Django deployments. Because, oh, well, we do Django Chat, which is the podcast, and every week someone will come on and they'll tell us about some hoops they've had to jump through for deployment. And then actually, whilst it's complex, there are a lot of moving parts. You don't have to make it more complex than it needs to be. And so JButton is my take on that. And I've been thinking about it and wanting to get it done for a long time. And as I say, without capacity, and now I have that capacity. So I'm hoping to launch that in the fall, which will be a sort of finally, you know, one of these, oh, wow, it's actually happened after all this time.
So you said hopefully launching in the fall. It's August now. You realize that, right? So fall is coming.
Yeah. No. So okay. I'm really close. So the back end all works. I've got people using it. It all functions. It's how I've been deploying applications myself for years and with clients, and it's all evolved. And a lot of what I've been doing is taking it from what works on my machine to what works on any machine. And that that process takes a long time. I think in the Mythical Man month, I think first chapter or second chapter of that, there's this lovely grid where it's like where you've got a script in one corner and you've got a productized product down the other, and it's times three along one axis and times three along the other. So, you know, to ship the product is actually 10 times the amount of time it takes you to ship the script. and so that's where my time has been going. And, you know, I've learned a couple of UI paradigms, and I've experimented with various deployment strategies, because what I want to build is a native application. So it'll be a native application that you download to your desktop and you enter your things, and that's all coming. And it's been coming for a long time, and I'm really happy with it, but it's obviously taken a lot longer than it should have done. So that's okay.
All right. Cool. But it'll be something that you built and you're happy with or proud of. Or
yeah,
something.
No, exactly. Yeah. And I mean, so we talked about freelancing a little bit. Like, I did that for a long, 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 long time. And it's great. And I could continue to do it if I had to. But part of me is like, no, I'd much rather build products. So this is why I'm excited about the PaaS application. It's why I'm excited about Button. And, you know, there'll be a couple of other ideas that will follow in the year or two after that. I'd like to build now a small portfolio of products that just do their thing. And, you know, if if I can find a market for those, then that would be wonderful. And if not, well, I'll continue to busk on the streets as I always have.
Now I got to see that. So you got any videos of you on the streets, you know, dancing?
No, not on the street. I try to keep, you know, if I see someone with a camera, I have to go and take it off them and destroy the evidence.
Awesome. We're not going to release the video, but I was imagining you putting air quotes when you said pilot, you know, client work is great.
It is. The analogy that always comes to mind, I don't know if you remember the film Ben-Hur from the, you know, 19, whenever it was, but like when he gets imprisoned on the Roman galleon and he's tied, he's chained to an oar, and there's a drummer that sets the rhythm, and they have to keep the rhythm. And if they don't keep the rhythm, they get whipped and they until they collapse, and they get unchained and thrown over the side, and someone else gets chained in their place. Client work is a bit like that. It's always project driven. It's always deadline driven. It's always project based. So there's a deadline, and then there's another deadline, and there's another deadline, and it's well remunerated. And so you can sort of fill up your bank account, and you can take a break from it. But when the money's gone, you go back to it. And it's very much a treadmill. And that's okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. It as I say, it's well remunerated to pay for that. But, it's tiring. And, you know, I remember, when I started the fellow role, I was very one reason why I was like, oh yeah, I'll apply for that, was because I did want a break from that routine. I've been doing it a dozen years, and it is great. It's exciting. It's fun. It's always challenging. It's always, you know, it's interesting, and it's well remunerated. But it's not very forgiving. There's no space. There's not much space for life in it, if that makes sense.
Well, I think I probably didn't do it long enough to get to the point where it was paid enough to make it worth it. I guess I did a way back a long time ago. I did a restaurant website with PHP, and then built an e-commerce site for somebody based on WordPress, actually. But and neither one of them paid near enough to make it worth the time I had to put into it. But I was still learning at the time. So yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Those first few years are really tough because you haven't got the portfolio or the experience to pick, you know, or even the business knowledge as well. I mean, more experience, and you realize that there is a lot of money around. And, you know, in the end, I was working for, you know, household names, you know, very big companies, but via agencies that were, so I wasn't contracting directly with those agents, with the big companies. Yeah. I was going by the agencies, and they would pay a rate. And,
okay.
You know, but they really want their, you know, they know the business too, and they really want their pound of flesh. And so, you know, it works.
So
it works both ways.
You said you have four kids.
Yes.
Young kids, old kids?
Well, they get older all the time. So the eldest is 15, and then one at 13, and two who are nearly 11. So,
okay.
If you do the maths backwards there, so we had two, and we thought, oh, we'll have a third, and then we had twins, right? So when our twins were born, we had a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and two newborns. Which was the word is brutal. It was utterly brutal. The first couple of years, I barely survived. No question.
Well, the good news is I think being a parent myself is the first year is like so hard that you don't, like there's some defense mechanism that blocks it out. So I barely remember most of the first year of either of my kids' lives.
It's totally gray, so I refuse to recall that. But there were moments when like all four, because a 4-year-old is not a grown child, right? A 4-year-old has a lot of needs, and a 2-year-old is basically a toddler, and they have a lot of needs. And so you've got a 4-year-old with a lot of needs, a 2-year-old with a lot of needs, and two newborns who are, you know, fresh out of the bath and screaming, and it's like all four of them going off at once. And you just like the only thing that comes to mind is that British slogan about the war, keep calm and carry on. You just have, okay, I'll deal with you, okay, you're happy now, right, okay, now the next. And that just went on for a couple of years.
Can't imagine how like going anywhere would work. Like
we don't go anywhere. We never go anywhere ever. So we used to travel when before we had kids. We traveled and we, you know, saw a lot of the world. Now it's like no. Will we drive 3 hours away to see family. Oh, that's maybe not. Like, it's quite hard. And so we try and do things with like one of them. So one of us will take one of them. And
okay,
you know, because that's, you know, that's easy. that's no problem.
Well, and things that are like not that bad, they're like, you know, yeah, this is a little expensive, but not terrible, as with like a couple, like things like going to a movie suddenly are expensive with six people.
No, exactly. And they're like, can we have a drink in the square? You're like, well, no, we can't have a drink. It's like, that would be 40 euros just for a drink. Of course you can't have a drink. And they're like, why can't we ever have anything? It's because there are too many of you.
Yeah. Yeah, but we finally, my kids are pretty good. We've like told them that, yeah, we go to nice restaurants when we don't have you with us. That's when we go to nice restaurants. No.
But as well, I don't know about your kids, Brian, but my kids, they just won't eat anything. Like, so, you would, if I were to take them to a nice restaurant, they would be presented with something which they hadn't had before that wasn't spaghetti bolognese. And they'd be like, I'm not eating this. And they'd make a fuss. And it'd be like, well, look, we'll take you there when you're 25 and you've realized that, you know, food has a joy to it.
Oh, no. We put our foot down. And like, one of my youngest, when we just had one, I remember we were just starting around food. On solid foods and stuff like that. And we talked to the pediatrician and said, we're kind of into Thai food now. Do we, cooking it at home and stuff. Do we need to make, is that okay to feed our kid? And she's like, yeah, Thai kids eat Thai food when they're babies and Mexican kids eat Mexican food. It's fine. I still remember we moved once and my, youngest was maybe five, four. She was still sitting in a high chair and not really great with spoons yet. So she was younger than that. And we ordered Tom Kha guy, the soup, a curry, spicy curry soup. And we said, can we get water glass? And they're like, what? And so we just put an empty, we just filled this water glass up with soup so she could just drink it. The waiter just stood there and watched. And he said, I've never seen anything like this before. it was awesome. No, we're like,
good,
no,
you've done well.
This is dinner. But we did, you know, we didn't make our kids eat it, but we said, this is dinner. And if you don't like it, breakfast is in the morning.
But yeah, I think our kids know that there's always an alternative. So I think that's our own fault.
But they're old enough now; they probably are eating more stuff now.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, it's like they get much better, and over time, all of a sudden, like the eldest one was a vegetable dodger for years, and all of a sudden, it's like, no, he's getting to that age where his body wants more calories, and he's like, no, I'm going to eat everything that's offered. And that's a big change.
How about activities? Like, I just dropped off my kid this morning at like a thing she had to do at the school. Is there a lot of driving kids around with four kids and stuff?
Well, there would be if we lived in a bigger town. Fortunately, we live in a very small town where you can walk to the center of it. We live right on the edge of town. You can walk to the center in, I don't know, 6-8 minutes, depending on how fast you go. And
so if they have some activity, they can just walk or bike or something.
Yeah, I mean, my daughter does gymnastica, like floor routines, you know, like dance and acrobatic routines. And that could be all over the place. I'll have to drive off for an hour this way or an hour that way to go to some event. But that's, you know, but the sort of day-to-day, she walks down to the training and I walk down to pick her up and we walk home.
Yeah.
It's nice. I try not to use the cars if I can avoid it.
Portland's not like that. Portland is not built for walking around.
American cities are designed around the automobile. I got that impression when I've been.
But you're British? Is that right?
Yes, I am British. Yeah, well, yes, yeah, still just about.
But you live in Spain now.
Yeah, I've lived in Spain for like over a decade, 12 years now, 13 years coming up. And so well before Brexit, and when Brexit came, fortunately, the sanity enough prevailed that our rights to remain were protected with the exit treaty. So we have permanent residency here, you know, under that. But part of me thinks I, you know, may well take up Spanish nationality at some point because it's just slightly more conducive to, you know, traveling the rest of Europe and things like that and whatnot. But I can travel anywhere in Europe with my residence, Spanish residency card, and there's no problem with any of that. So it's not pressing, it's not urgent, but it's something that I might do. And I might encourage my kids to, when they reach 16, they can choose to adopt Spanish nationality. And then that would help them with studying or living elsewhere in the European Union, which as British citizens, they no longer have that right.
Oh, weird. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I never thought about
Brexit,
that.
That's the word to describe Brexit entirely is weird. It's just utter madness. But whatever, you know. Let's not get political. It's
okay, but I have to like bring up, I can't remember if I heard somebody say this and, oh no, I heard a comedian say this. She was complaining about, talking about Brexit. And she said that, she said she was talking to some people and they said, I can't believe that so many people would vote for something that's against their interests. And she said, have you met people?
Yeah. Well, this is the same, like with the, like both the British, Tory party, which is like the conservative, the right, the center right party in Britain, and the Republican party in the United States. And then in Spain, the PP, which it, again represents a kind of small economic niche, like basically the rich, and yet they're voted for by quite broad groups, sufficient to gain power or be close to gaining power almost every election. And yet it makes no sense from a kind of voting for your self-interest point of view. It's
We do that in the US too. So
yeah, I mean, it's everywhere, I think.
So, but I never really thought about how that would impact people living abroad, people from England living in Spain, because that's like frequent, right? There's quite a few people that live not in the country that they have nationality in. So
yeah, I mean, it's still very easy to retire from Britain to Spain. Like if you've, you know, as long as you've got a pension and whatnot, you can demonstrate that you're solvent, then you can retire to Spain from Britain on a special visa. But people wouldn't be able to do what we did, which was pack up, put our kids in the car. Well, I put the house in, we put most of our stuff in a van, which was going to take 6 weeks to arrive. And I loaded up the car with the essentials and I drove. And then my wife came and she bought a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old over on the plane. And we just came and we rented a house and we moved. And, you know, we put them in school and we were just there. You couldn't do that now.
Okay. Yeah, how does that work then? Do you pay like both English taxes and Spanish taxes?
No, the way it worked is that you're resident in whichever country, you're tax resident in whichever country you spend the most time in. So if you spend 183 days a year in Spain, then you're Spanish tax resident. If you spend that in Germany, you're German tax resident and so on. You pay your taxes there and then you can spend, I think, up to 3 months in any of the other countries without any problem at all. And then if you're going to spend longer than 3 months, you have to register and say, hey, I'm here.
Well, like when you retire, does both Spain and England help pay for your retirement then? Or how does that work?
Something like that. So the British government have a, because they can't, right. So here's was one of the big things is there's like a million retirees in Spain, British retirees in Spain. And so when Brexit happened, the last thing the British government wanted was those million people turning back in Britain, because whilst they can afford to live in Spain, they can't afford to live in Britain, where the house prices are higher, the cost of living is higher. Hmm. And so the British government is very much like, you know, you stay there and the British government pays the Spanish government for healthcare for pensioners.
Oh, okay.
For retirees.
Huh. So it's sort of civilized. So it's like still.
It's okay. Like Brexit just makes no sense. Nothing's changed in terms of immigration numbers to the UK. The only thing that's happened is the UK is poorer. That's all that's happened.
So how would your life change if you became a Spanish citizen then?
Well, okay, so probably not much, because I personally don't intend to leave where I live. I love where I live. I've learned Catalan. You know, nowhere else is that useful other than Catalonia. So I'm not moving, but I can't. Also, I can't, if I chose to, drive to France and move and live in France. I mean, you know, maybe I could if I could show I was financially viable, blah, 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 but I'd have to jump through all the hoops like anybody else. Whereas before, I could just get up and drive and go. And if I had a Spanish passport, I could do that still. But with a British passport, I can't.
Okay, got it. So how many languages do you speak?
Well, I speak English, just about, Spanish and Catalan. I'm learning French, and that's about it. I potter in other ones.
Have your kids picked up both Spanish and then?
Yeah, no, but they do it very differently. So I speak Spanish as someone who learned it as an adult. So I still have like an English accent, and as my accent improves over time, that's great. But I still have this kind of British mouth that makes British sounds, and so I sound essentially like Borat. If you know the comedian from Sacha Baron Cohen, who does the Borat character, who's meant to be fine, from Kazakhstan and speaks English, but in a comedic way. Well, I'm a bit like that when I speak Spanish or Catalan. My kids are all like, oh, no, don't. But my Catalan's very good. You know, people say, you've got good Catalan. But I still speak it like a foreigner and always will. Whereas my kids, they've spoken from like from children, and they have different voices. Like when they switch language, literally their voice changes, and they speak English natively and they speak Catalan and Spanish natively.
That's so cool. I always wonder,
yeah, and they don't even know. They don't even know. They just say, "Oh yeah, whatever. It's not important. It's not interesting." No, it really is a gift. As someone who, you know, when I came here a dozen years ago, I could ask to order two beers, and that was about it. And to be able to speak two, three, and four languages, it's just it's phenomenal for them. You know,
I just recently learned that there's more than one part of Spain.
Right, yeah, no, I learned that when I got here. Like, so we moved to Catalonia, and that I was like, that's not in the phrase, but what's they saying? Because I didn't know about Catalan, I didn't know about any of. Yeah, there are multiple regions.
Go on, so where cat are you saying Catalan? C A T, what is that?
Catalonia. So C A T A L O N I A. Catalonia.
Is that? I'll just Google it, but it's near Barcelona. Is that right?
Yeah. So Barcelona is the sort of capital of Catalonia, and it's that's northeast region of Spain is Catalonia, and then over to the sort of on the north coast there's the Basque Country, and then there's Galicia over on the northwest, and they're the sort of main non-Spanish areas, but also Valencia is kind of half Catalan, half separate to being not really Catalan. It's like they have a version of Catalan as their own language they speak down there.
Okay, cool. Are you near the ocean?
Yes, very near the ocean. So I could walk over from my back door. I'd be in the sea in half an hour if I was walking. I'd be in the sea in 10 minutes on a bike, or you know, about 10 minutes in a car.
Oh, lovely. So are there I guess beaches that you can hang out at? Or
yeah, it's amazing. It's lovely. What can I say? It's kind of why I came here. I mean, it's marvelous. So I live in a little town called Palafrugell, and around there's just a billion beaches. It's the population in the summer triples. So like middle of August now, it's horrible. There's just lots of people. It's really busy, but it's totally fine. And in literally 2 weeks' time, they'll all just disappear. And it's like September is the best time because all the tourists have gone. The sea is warm. The weather's still warm. It's not quite as hot as it is in August. And it's just, you know, the kids go back to school and, you know, life is perfect. And so I'm about an hour and a half from Barcelona, which is great if I want to go, but it's just a little bit too far to go regularly. So I don't get down to like the Python meetups and all those things that I could, because if, you know, they finish at 10 o'clock at night and I've got an hour and a half drive home, it's just not going to happen. So I don't get down there as often as I could.
What kind of conferences do you usually go to then?
Well, with four kids, it's quite limited. You know, I don't do the whole EuroPython every rally, but I always will go to DjangoCon Europe since 2017. I've been using Django forever. I never knew about DjangoCon. I never knew about the Django community. And then I think it came up like I saw Django Under the Hood and I was like, oh, that looks good. I perhaps should have gone to that. And then it came up Django New York Florence. And I went, right, I'm going to that. So I went and I just turned up. I was like, oh, wow, this is the home I've been missing. Because I'd been to tech conferences, you know, at the beginning of my career. And they're not the same as the Django community. There was no mention of diversity or inclusion or any of those, you know, Dango has a code of conduct that's enforced. It's a very nice environment. It isn't, it's not, there is alcohol there, but it's not booze fueled in a way that some of the conferences I went to early in my career, I didn't really find, they were okay, but I didn't like them. Whereas I went to Django Con, I was like, oh yes, this is somewhere I need to be. And so I go to Django Con. If I can, I'll go to Django Con US. I'm not sure I'm going to make it this year because my son's been ill. He's been ill for over a year, and that's been going on. It's been hard. He's getting better, but I don't know. I'm leaving it right to the last minute to decide whether I can go to Django Con US this year because it's quite a long way and a big travel. And then this year I went to PyCon Italia, which was lovely. I was asked to keynote there, so I gave a talk on open source for the long haul. So it was lovely to go back to Florence, and they treated me very well, and it was just wonderful. But I don't go to, you know, a million Python conferences that perhaps I would if I, maybe I might do in a few years when the kids have all gone off to university and I've got nothing else to do. I might go to a few more conferences.
Yeah, I kind of want to ramp it up again. I of course, through the pandemic, they weren't happening. And then, so I've got one daughter out of that moved out and one still here, but it's tolerable now with one at home that it's okay if I take off and stuff. So
I mean, it's a big ask to go away when there's four and, you know, leave whoever's left behind. You know, it's not zero, you know.
My wife and I just binged like both the first two episodes of Warrior Nun, I have to admit. But it's based in Europe, and there's some like Madrid scenes, and there's some other parts of it. It's Switzerland, I think. And anyway, I was reminded that like Europe is smaller than the US. I mean, maybe in total it might be bigger, but you can get from one interesting place to another interesting place that's different in a day trip or like at least a day drive, which I really, at some point I'd love to be able to like spend the summers over there or something like that, so I could see more of the world in one trip instead of just going one place and then coming back. Because if you drive for a day here, you get to somewhere that's kind of like where you left. It's really not that different. So, a couple of days you can get someplace where they're meaner and they wear more cowboy hats. But, you know, you actually don't have to go that far. You can go a couple hours outside of the city anywhere, even in Oregon, and it gets a little crazy. But anyway.
Yeah, no. I mean, your extended trip around Europe, I think if you can carve the life space to do that and you've got the finances, that's an amazing thing to do.
That'd be fun. So one of the things you said was this is the home that you'd been missing. And I felt that as well about Python. I'd been using it for 10 years before I start, maybe 15 years before I got involved with the community. And it's like a completely different language. If you go to the conferences and start listening to the podcasts and sharing and start contributing, it just feels different. It feels so. Before then, my using a programming language was fun, but it was like it was a tool. Then suddenly I like entered into it was like adding color to it or something. It just was way better.
Entirely. I wouldn't have done 5 years as the fellow, as a Django fellow, if it wasn't for Django being what Django is. Like, it's just like, it was great, it was awesome, but I just wouldn't have done that if it weren't for Django being, you know, so close to my heart.
One of the things I wanted to ask about, a couple things, more things. You've been involved with not just Django itself, but other like open source projects probably around Django and Python. I ran into something, I guess I just wanted your opinion on it. I ran into a thing recently where I was using a little Python tool, and it was part of my test pipeline. And like two things work together to make this work, and one of them isn't being updated anymore.
Right. Yes.
That's kind of something, one of the things you have to deal with is the maintainers just not doing what they're doing. And I don't know what's wrong. I don't know if they're just on vacation this summer or if something happened, or there's like that black hole of like, you don't get to see into people's lives and find out why are they not maintaining this anymore. Have you ever dealt with that? And like, at one point do you fork it and like do your own thing?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. So, I ended up maintaining, for instance, Django Filter because it was unmaintained. I ended up maintaining Django Crispy Forms because it was unmaintained. I ended up, you know, stepping in to maintain the channel trolls because they were, you know, in danger of being unmaintained. I guess the first thing is to open an issue saying, hey, you know, do you need any help? That's always good. But again, one thing that can be a pressure is people saying, oh, you know, why aren't you maintaining this properly? But it's like, well, it is maintained properly. I just haven't done it recently, you know, like, yeah. I'll be back and, you know, don't stress it. So I think one thing is to make sure you can install the dependency from your own fork with pip. So pip install, and then you point to your Git version rather than off pip, PyPI. And people, you know, in some enterprise environments can't do that because they have to have the security approval for every package. But if it's your own pipeline, you can install your own local one. And then the issue that instead of just saying, you know, do you need help or is this project dead or, you know, any of those sort of things which put pressure on the maintainer, say, hey, look, I've made these changes. I've resolved issue here in this branch and, you know, it can be merged on my branch here that I'm using. These issues are resolved, and just sort of update that every so often so that you give the maintainer an opportunity to engage and say, and if you know, at the bottom of that comment, you can just say, hey, and you know, if you want some help in maintaining, I'm really happy to help merge you into the main package. And if the maintainer then still doesn't respond, and then you might say, look, I'm just going to put up on PyPI because I need it, you know. But again, it's a soft fork. It's like, you know, I'm happy to get all this merged back into the main package. Yeah. And then eventually it's like, you know, the maintainer will email you and say, hey, thanks for all the work you've been doing. You wouldn't mind just taking over the main package, would you? Because frankly, I've had a hell of a year and I haven't even had a chance to look at it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it's tough to try to communicate with, you don't know what's happening on the other end. But yeah.
I mean, I've just had an utter nightmare of a year. Like, it's since I went to Django Con US last October, and on the way home, my son had already been sort of ill for a few months, but we thought he was getting better or whatever. But then on the way home, I was in the passport line at Barcelona. My wife rang me. She's like, I'm in a hospital. Our daughter's fallen down the stairs. And, you know, she was 3 days in intensive care, you know, all sorts. It was just like, oh. And then, you know, coming up to Christmas, she's just recovering. And then my son, his illness isn't getting better. And it's like, oh, and we go through Christmas and then we go to the doctors and just months and months of tests and diagnosis and not sure what it is and waiting for appointments and going to appointments, just mental, just really, really, really full on. And so Django Filter hasn't had the update it needs. The channels packages haven't had the update they need. You know, my other packages that I put out this summer, they're waiting for another little update. That hasn't happened yet. That's okay. Do you know what? That's okay.
Yeah.
These packages, they're not unmaintained. I haven't gone anywhere. They're still working. There aren't any life or death bugs that are, you know, someone said to me this week, is there a 4.2 compatibility package coming for channels? I'm like, it's already compatible. It just hasn't got the Trove classifier. I just haven't done the release. And they're like, okay, thanks, no problem. But it's like, you know, yes, it will come. Yes, it's behind because I've had all these personal issues, but I'm still maintaining them. I'll be back. And those packages are fine. But you're right, as a user, you don't really know that. So I've tried to put a few blog posts up, but just explaining where I'm at. But people who don't follow my blog, they're not going to know about that.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I just try and say, look, and so someone came on the Daphne package. Oh, is this issue still open? I'm like, look, there's a couple of PRs that are in there. I haven't had a chance to look at those, but if you looked at those, that would really help me, you know, maybe push it forward over the next month or so. You know, we'll get there. But who knows what the maintainer is going through is the point of that.
Yeah. Right. Because I do have that, like, one, another thing that happened, I don't know, several months ago, a similar sort of thing. I like did a merge request and didn't hear anything. And then I went and looked and noticed that there were like three or four other merge requests and issues that weren't being addressed. I posted a message, said, hey, it was a project that I was interested in. And I said, hey, I, If you'd like some help, I could help with this project. And then, I don't know, a week later or something, I got an email back that said, oh yeah, I'm back to it. But like I had a death in the family and had to deal with that. Yeah. And yeah, stuff like that happens. So.
I think as a user, I think the biggest thing is as a user is be prepared to deploy your branch. Like just like don't insist on a maintainer having, you know, merged your PR instantly and done a new package release instantly, because, you know, sometimes it's like, you know, I fixed this one little bug, but also I need to update the packaging and I need to do this and I need to do that to get a proper release out. And it might be that I haven't been able to push your patch to PyPI. Yeah. And if you can be aware of that, it just goes a lot easier on the maintainer who's, you know. It's not that they're unaware.
So do you still maintain Crispy Forms?
No. David okay. Smith has taken, I mean, I'm still there. I offer the odd bit of advice and, you know, I read the docs. They wanted you to move to this YAML file that they wanted you to put in. So I helped get that going for it recently. But David Smith, who's came in a few years ago and has just taken over, and he's just done so much. And he's done all this stuff in the Django over the 4.x release cycle for updating the forms, the new templates, the new template renderers. He's just, he's done everything there. And so all credit to him, he's maintaining that. And he created the Django Crispy Forms Tailwind package, which is like example templates for how you might integrate with Tailwind and he takes all the credit there. I'm still there for sort of you know a bit of company type of thing, but I'm not still maintaining.
But okay, so I've heard that so I'm still kind of getting into Django. I've heard that the built-in forms are better now. I mean, if I had a new project and I wanted to build a form, should I try the built-in stuff first or?
Yeah, absolutely. And if you can, you want to get onto, how can you? Yes, you want to be definitely using 4.2, but in 5.0, there's another thing coming, which is this as field group, thing, which it, so if you imagine an individual input, it's got a label, it's got the actual input itself, it's got probably some errors, it's got help text, and they all kind of come together. And yet in the template, if you manually did the template, you'd do each of them separately. And if you look into the template, each of them is separate. But in 5.0, there's a kind of as field group helper, which you can just sort of use that, put that one bit in, and that's, and so it makes writing custom forms more easy. It makes writing, say, for instance, a custom layout where you want to have this field next to that field, and then that's in a field set, and then three more fields in a separate field set. It makes writing that kind of custom template a lot quicker. But the new stuff in the 4.x cycle is really good. It lets you customize at the project level the templates you want to use just really easily. So I'm using it in my new projects, and I'm kind of, what's interesting for me at the moment working on those is kind of going through and seeing, well, how close to reinventing Crispy Forms do I have to get? And then I can start having conversations with David about, well, you know, how would we do this in, you know, Django native versus do we want to use something like Crispy Forms and add on? And so there's a conversation that David and I have slowly begun about, well, what does Crispy Forms look like going forward?
Okay. Interesting. Cool. Well, I want to thank you for your time today. It was really great to hear about Spain.
Yeah, really good chatting. A little off topic as well, because normally we just talk about Django or something like that. And so it's nice to, you know, go around the side and.
Yeah, and now I actually seeing pictures of Madrid in the Warrior Nun, which my daughter and I both think that they really dropped the ball, and because Nunja was right there and they didn't take it. I mean, I think Nunja is better than Warrior Nun, but anyway.
Okay.
but Madrid looks cool, and Barcelona shows up in the movies a lot. And I hadn't really had Spain in my radar for places I wanted to go, but now I kind of want to go to Spain because it looks pretty cool. So anyway.
Yeah. And you've got to go to like Cadiz and Sevilla and Granada, which are three cities down in the south. You know, you don't go in the summer though, because it's just like inferno down there. But there's like the Alhambra in Granada, which is just amazing. So if you can do the south, and then and Spain has, I think, after China, the largest high-speed rail network in the world. So, you know, you can also, so it's the second largest in the world, and you can cruise around between the cities. You can beam from Seville to Madrid in 3 hours, and Madrid to Barcelona in a couple of hours, and then from Barcelona you can get to Paris in 6 or something like that. So,
wow, yeah, you could, didn't know that either. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, it is cool. And, you know, so, okay, it's slightly quicker to fly in terms of time in the air, but you don't have to be at the airport 2 hours in advance and, you know, go through all that, you know, there's quite the same level of security checks and whatnot. I think they have little scanners, but it's not the same, you know.
Oh,
the same
no level. Kidding. So, like, when I went up to Pike Cascades, I decided that was in Vancouver this last year, and I decided to take the train. Because it was either that or drive, because it was you know, close enough, and it did take a long time, like way longer than was listed. But it was kind of nice because I could just, you know, walk, show up, and get on the train and eat there, and it's a lot of walking around. But way better than flying, except for the whole, like, it took like 3 hours longer than it said it was going to, or something.
Okay, well, I can't. Yeah, I mean, I think the high speed trains, they kind of run on time there, so there's that going for them.
Yeah, nice. All right. Well, it was so fun talking with you, and we'll catch up later.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. All right, take care, Brian.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Python People. Let's keep in touch. Head over to pythontest.com/contact. to reach out to me, or /newsletter so that I can reach you, or /support if you'd like to, you know, get a course or something.